Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey guys, what's up? It's Jules here for What Culture Gaming on the podcast, on the gaming channel. Joined today by Benjamin.
Good afternoon.
And Rachel Shackleton.
Hello guys.
And the reason that we've gathered here today in this very, very chilly office is because we want to talk about boss battles. Now, I think that we all have experienced some fantastic boss battles in gaming, you know, like Revolver Ocelot or Dr. Robotnik from Sonic or Dark Souls in general, I know would be your pick, Rachel.
Well.
But what we're going to do today is basically try to dissect why boss battles in video game are such a prevalent thing. Where they came from, where they're going in the future, and to be honest, is it a relevant thing in this day and age? I mean, just to kick things off, what are sort of some memorable boss battles that you can think of?
Well, you mentioned Revolver Ocelot in your intro there, and I think the one that sticks out to most people of my ripening generation is...
Ripening?
Ripening, yes. And also, you just mentioned it's cold, by the way. I'm still peeling from the sunshine, so I'm happy of this coolness. But yeah, back on the bosses, it's Psychomantis from Metal Gear Solid. Was one of the, I think, probably the most subversive bosses around when like when that game first came out. You know, the whole situation where even just the preemptive stuff in the boss, where he reads your memory card to simulate reading your mind, and when the way you beat him is to switch the controllers.
Yep.
So you can no longer do that. That's some fantastic outside-the-box thinking. And that's actually an example of how boss design is often being used to be particularly innovative.
I guess that it comes down to a point of, like, you've got to define what a boss is, but we'll go into that more after Rachel tells us what her sort of, like, favourite boss battles are.
I'd like to spotlight one that's much more recently, and that would be Isshin the Sword Saint from Sekiro.
Oh, man.
Now, that was the boss.
He can get in the bin.
Like, to end all bosses for me, yeah. There was ups, there was downs, and there was eventual victory, and that was what made that boss so special, was that it was so difficult.
It's interesting, because you two have highlighted two very distinctive parts of a boss battle, which is one that's subverting expectations and one that is basically presenting a challenge through which the player overcomes. Now those are both staple tropes of a boss battle, and I think that if we were to define what a boss battle is in video games, you'd probably say that a boss has to have more health than an average grunt or even the player themselves, can usually do massive one-hit KOs. Like, I mean, this isn't like a definitive rule set, but just...
Maybe it takes more than one person to kill.
Yes, things like that. And then it will have multiple forms is another one as well.
I think also crucially, it has to feel like a struggle.
Has to feel like a struggle, yeah.
It's also interesting, I think, what it used to be designed as a choke point more than anything. If we look at the origins of the term boss, I think... I don't think it's possible to, like, precisely put your finger on when that term became common, but I think it dates back to Gallagher in 1983, where there was literally an enemy called Boss Gallagher.
Now, oh, right, okay.
Boss Gallagher, you know, a colleague of ours.
Yeah.
But the whole point in Gallagher is to take your money. So you put one very tough enemy there that suddenly demands more quarters.
Yeah.
And that was the prevailing logic with bosses, even going into the early consoles, which is less of the case today, but a lot of the principles that defined that have persisted as a consequence?
Yeah, I mean, the arcade days, obviously the burgeoning point of where boss battles would come in. There was a game called D&D, which was released in 1975, and that's where most people say that the original boss battle, not necessarily the terminology, yeah, but where the boss battle came from. Because in that game, you were an adventurer, you were going through a dungeon, and at the very end, you'd fight a dragon, hence the D&D, because I mean, dungeons and or dragons, and you got an orb for beating it. And the developer said that in an interview, he wanted to place importance on that orb. He thought that if you just were to go through the dungeon and you just got the orb, it wouldn't mean as much, because while the trial and the journey of getting there would be potentially a bit difficult, there was nothing to basically act as a final test. So he created the dragon, and as soon as he did that, he realized that the orb suddenly had value,
yep,
because it was protected, because it was being held at arm's length from the player, and you would need to have a certain skill set in order to get it. What he did effectively in that time was translate the power of points that you would say in like Pac-Man, which doesn't have a boss battle, it's just how far can you go, or maybe Donkey Kong add a push, because I mean, Donkey Kong technically is a boss, but you never actually fight him in a one-on-one sort of scenario. He turned that to the power that a boss can give to something else.
Absolutely.
And it's really interesting how that shift was almost inconsequential at the time, but has influenced so many important boss battles now. Because how many times have you guys come up to a boss in a game and been like, well, it's not necessarily that I dislike you or anything about you, it's just you're stopping me from getting to what I want. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like in Borderlands, for example, you've got characters that literally just stand in the way as like as checkpoints, as blocks to your path of progress, and you're just like, yeah, but I kind of want to just kill you to get some guns. I want to get more loot. Like, you know, it's nothing personal, mate, but just lie down for a bit and take a quick nap, you know?
For example, like in Zelda, how to progress, like through a dungeon, you often need an item that you get from killing the mini boss halfway through.
I often save them as an exam of all the things you've learned at that point. It's effectively everything else is revision, and then, right? Here's your exam. Have you revised enough? If you have, then great. You get your grade. You get your job. Whatever.
But I mean, Legend of Zelda is a perfect example of that, because, like you say, the dungeons are themed around the item that you need to kill the boss with.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, it combines your idea of the exam with the idea of just great level design.
And so, more often than not, the bosses in Zelda, not so much in Link to the Past, but from Ocarina of Time onwards, ask the player to, like, have you mastered this item yet? Because this is how you're going to need to use it going forward. And this, like, that's how you have to kill the boss in this situation.
Yeah, it's interesting because you go into sort of video game design choices then. I mean, how do you tell the player how to beat your boss? It's the concept of a fair fight, because a lot of times, like especially in fighting games, there are a lot of cheap bosses out there, and that harkens back to the idea that you were saying of the arcade days, where they just wanted your money. They would make a purposefully cheap boss with a million health points and tons of all these things, not to necessarily test the player, just because they were like, well, you've got some cash to spend, so why not do that?
The way bosses used to operate is what I always refer to as Castlevania bosses, which were completely attritional. It was based on, can you outlast them? Can you kill them before they kill you? Often you couldn't avoid the attacks. You just had to batter them until
kind of like Mega Man as well.
Very similar to Mega Man bosses. Yeah. Although, like, Mega Man actually does have obviously it has a rock, paper, scissors thing, but that's based on the order of the Robot Masters that you're fighting. Mm-hmm. You don't know that in advance, so there's a huge element of trial and error. But gradually, as games evolved, we get bosses which now sort of give little clues about the attacks we're going to use.
I love a boss fight to be as much of an action as a puzzle. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love a good puzzle boss. You see them a lot in Souls, and I'm surprised I'm not talking about Souls like for a solid 30 minutes here, but a lot of those bosses are, I don't want to say cheap, but there's one in particular in Dark Souls 3 that you literally, like, you go up to him and he's massive and you immediately start hacking away and you do just, like, no damage. So you're then forced to think, right, I should be doing some damage here. You check your surroundings, you kind of think, right, what's that thing over there? You go pick it up. Surprise, it's a weapon that he is weak to.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Those are my favorite kind of bosses require...
That's one of the great conceits of excellent boss designs, is where they present the assumption that you can come in and hit it and it'll hurt it, and then it doesn't. And then you have to step back and think for a few and, like, actually pay attention.
Yeah, and look at the design. Yeah. Like, for example, like, if it's covered in lava. You probably shouldn't use fire.
If it has a glowing spot anywhere about its person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, weak spot. Like that
shoot
actually,
it in the eyeball.
But it's interesting because we're now verging into the difference between good and bad boss design. Because I would argue that a good boss design is able to present its weakness to the player without it being so immediately obvious that it's like a glowing weak spot.
And I think one of the issues we have now is that we're so used to the various tropes of boss design that we automatically know what to look for. Yeah. Like you say, you know, an eye's going to be like, oh, I'm going to like
Well, this. I mean, the classic one is any large enemy in a sort of superhero action game, it's going to charge you, you're going to jump out of the way, it's going to hit its head on the wall, and then you'll be able to beat it. The amount of times that I've come up against that particular enemy, I've never needed any help from the game to do it. And as a result, I've ended up resenting that boss battle as not something I've necessarily enjoyed.
Another one for me, bosses which use shockwaves that you have to jump over until they become tired and you run in for a few hits in the back, and that's every 3D platformer
so
ever.
So we all agree that like bosses that sort of subvert these tropes are quite often the best bosses.
I think so, and I think obviously it's difficult to keep coming up with new ideas as games go on. Like, there's only so many ideas out there.
Yeah.
So maybe it's time the more subversive bosses going forward will be the ones that actually maybe do things wrong.
Oh, see, I thought of the simplest thing, because I was playing Link's Awakening recently. The thing with Nintendo and a lot of, you know, sort of staple games is you hit the guy three times and he dies.
Yeah,
it's always the rule of three. But there was this boss in Link's Awakening that I had to hit four or five times and it completely threw me off. And I was just like, what are you doing, Nintendo? What? This is wrong. This is bad.
Because you almost think you're doing it wrong. Like, it's meant to there's got to be a quicker way
of doing it. Yeah, I was thinking, right, what am I doing wrong here? Mm. But turns out you just have to hit it five times instead of three. But that was good because that had me on my toes. That had me thinking, oh, sugar, like, is this right? And I love that. Just I love anything that does anything differently. And that actually includes QuickTime bosses. I don't know how you feel about QuickTime bosses.
Ooh, well, this is the thing. I can definitely list a notable bad example of a QuickTime boss, and that was Sauron at the end of the Middle Earth game.
I heard about
that. Oh man, that was so disappointing.
That is. Oh, that's a big one. Like a final boss to be a QuickTime event, I don't like. But
rude.
Like a mini boss, it's just insulting.
Rude, yes. But actually,
just to interrupt you, Fred. It's annoying because you're anticipating that boss fight throughout the entire game.
Totally.
Yes. Which actually comes back to another main point of bosses, which is their placement within the story. Now, a lot of people always assume that a boss is usually going to be the final boss or anything like that. But if you've got a great boss, what it actually becomes is a villain, because a villain is something that haunts the player throughout the story and will actually make them more incentivized to go and carry on with the narrative to kill that villain or defeat them. Whereas bosses, they can be standalone. They can be just caveat experiences.
Sometimes they're just parachuted in and then...
Yeah, I mean, the amount of times that you've got a boss that's had no backstory whatsoever and it's just like, okay.
I actually think this is one of the really interesting things Sega did with Dr. Robotnik appearing at the end of every single level. Now, I never really understood why he didn't just use his very best Egomatic at the start of Green Hill.
Yeah.
He's on the journey like you are.
Well,
he's trying things. It's
a really interesting parallel narrative where he learns from his mistakes every time. Yeah. Oh, God, that didn't work. I'll go back and hammer away.
He keeps trying harder. That's so good.
So, maybe I shouldn't put a giant weak spot on the top of its head, but I will make sure that all my robots have my face on them. I want people to know that it's Robotnik.
Hey, you got to stick to your own guns, man.
The very last level of Sonic as well, he finally just says balls to this machine and just stands in a little chamber and just tries to crush him, because as we know that's what hurts hedgehogs, but it's that actually applies in Mario as well.
Yeah.
So it's two games very similar.
Well, I mean, Mario's got a great example in the form of the Koopa Kids. The Koopa Kids are effectively visual representations of Bowser, who we know is the main antagonist in most Mario games. So therefore, seeing smaller versions of him actually instills in the player a memory of saying, oh, I am beating a smaller version of Bowser, therefore I'm learning and feel more confident to take on Bowser at the end. It's all about interesting visual design that I love about bosses, because they can look completely separate to the other parts of the game. I mean, I'm trying to think of a good example where you'll just be walking along and it won't even fit the visual style. It will just pop up and you'll be like, oh man, that's crazy. Like Azura's Wrath. The style of and size of these bosses is insane, but yet they don't sit alongside the main grunts. I mean, you've got one that literally punches through the earth at one point, and it's just like, how are you meant to go from that to then fighting small little grunty people. Like, I don't know. It's strange how bosses are paced throughout games sometimes.
But. I think like we were saying before, they can be anything they need to be for the narrative as well. Quite often, in my opinion, the best, well, villains, I was going to say bosses, but you're right, they are villains. The best villains have backstories.
Mm-hmm.
You have time throughout the game to get to know them or hate them or whatever. So when that fight comes, you know, it means a whole lot more.
A good one is Dark Souls 3. It instills in you that there's a... the Lords of Cinder have awoken but not linked the fire or whatever's going on with that. So the player knows from the off, I know which bosses... who I'm going to be fighting, and there's a reason. Because I feel like the best bosses, in my opinion, are ones that have a reason to beat them.
Absolutely.
Like, I will admit, I enjoy optional super bosses and stuff like that because of the challenge they represent, but it's much better to beat something and narratively have a purpose to it.
Yeah, because as you say, the optional super bosses lack context. Mm-hmm. So it's just like you're doing it for the sake of doing it. But I think we mentioned Metal Gear Solid earlier again, that it introduces all of its bosses very early on. You're thoroughly aware of the people you're going to hunt down when you finally come face to face with them. It's really exciting.
Mm.
You've heard about them, like they've gained a reputation in your own mind, and you can't wait to like take them on.
Yeah.
Again, with Mega Man. You get to see who you're going up against. Yeah.
And the whole stage is completely themed around them as well.
It sort of becomes a level less that is about the experience of getting to them and just about the boss fight itself. And I do think that if you have created a good boss fight, then it should be memorable, stand outside of the main game, but work well within it. But that's not stopped some games from just doing away with all of those conventions. And as we've said before, subverting it in either the boss battle themselves or offering up a different type of challenge to the player. But sometimes in the controls in which you're actually battling them. A good example of a one that's integrated it well is Crash Bandicoot. So in that game, it's about running and jumping and spinning over platforms, pits and traps. The controls stay the same throughout the game. The bosses ask you to use them in different ways, like jumping over Papu Papu's stick or making Ripperoo blow himself up. But then there are games that completely derail your expectations of how you play the game and give you something like a turret section. Or they'll be like, oh, in this battle, the gravity is completely gone, so you have to now fight him only when he's touching this panel and stuff. And it's like the rules will be completely changed.
Is that kind of like Metroid Prime-y kind of
similar,
style? Yeah.
I think a really great example would be Mario 64.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes!
Because the whole game... you jump in on things and it's about platforming, and then suddenly the boss is about grabbing him and swinging him. That's the only time you really do that in the game. And it's, I mean, admittedly, it was just to show off the analog stick capabilities, but like it is such a different challenge and more memorable for it.
Very, very true.
Yeah, everyone knows the so long, Bowser.
Yeah. And away he flies off into the sunset.
I remember the constant just ongoing debate about what Mario actually said when he let go of Bowser.
Yeah, because it kind of sounds like gay Bowser, doesn't it?
Is that what he's saying?
Yeah. Dear Bowser, so long, dear Bowser.
Oh, pretty
sure.
It's a long day, Bowser.
It's a long day, Bowser. Yeah. Then you've got games like Shadow of the Colossus, which they...
These are games which have made boss fights a genre in themselves.
Yeah. That's incorporating a boss into the level.
Cuphead.
Yep, Cuphead is a great example of a boss rush game, which is another popular thing, because... people are starting to separate the experience of the boss having to mean anything in terms of the story and just saying, right, as long as it's a fun challenge and I know how to beat it, or it's a fair challenge.
But then at least in Cuphead, you know at some point you're going to come up against the devil.
Yeah.
So you have these bosses who you're like, obviously you're doing the devil's work. Beating these bosses are all so different and so wonderful because they don't need to mean much to the story. They're free to just be really creative. But then you know the whole time, I'm going to fight the devil at the end. So you have that villain like waiting for you as well.
Well, it's interesting that in that game that they added in the run and gun levels when they originally weren't part of the design choice at all. I think it was Microsoft who just said, like, you're going to need to have some platforming bits in this because we don't think that a boss rush game will sell. Wrong they were.
Like, yeah, it goes down to the idea that bosses are a supplemental part of games.
Mm-hmm.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Even as much as a completely crucial part of most of experiences.
They are crucial. I can't really imagine an action game, action RPG game. Can't really imagine many games, enjoying many games anyway. Obviously, there's like sports games and stuff like that that don't have bosses, and racing games, etc.
Except Diddy Kong Racing.
Oh, yes! Oh, man.
Rare got a lot of criticism for Banjo-Kazooie for its lack of bosses. So I thought, right, we'll put bosses in every single game from now on, no matter what type of game it is.
They put it in, they had Wizpig, didn't they?
Wizpig, yeah.
Wizpig was hard, man.
I hated Wizpig.
He cheated, yeah. Such a cheater.
But I guess the question comes now is that, do video games need bosses?
Yes. Well, the games that I like do.
Mm.
I like, I love the design options. I love loving slash hating a villain. I love the overcoming the challenge. For me, the best games have good bosses.
I guess it does work, depend on the genre. I mean, you wouldn't have a boss in Journey. Journey feels like if they did put a boss into the end of that, it would A, be completely at odds with the game itself for the other hours that you've been playing it, and also kind of make it into a combative thing rather than an emotional experience.
Into a game rather than an experience.
Yeah, but there are a lot of games that are now just experiences, and it does call into question, if a game is clever enough, do they need boss battles? Because are we relying on it as a crutch for basically when they feel like they can't get a player hooked? Because if we go back to the, just very quickly, the idea of overcoming a boss's challenge, what that does is it sets the player up, it tests their skill, and they take that emotional high that they get for beating something and they carry it forward into the rest of the story. Is that lazy programming?
Actually,
is that bad? Like, you know.
Now that you mention it, because it's all about the reward at the end. Mm. So for me, for example, it's, well, overcoming challenge is my current high. Mm-hmm. but you can have this really, really great story game that doesn't need boss battles because, like, for example, The Last of Us.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have a boss battle at the end. That has a really, like,
yeah,
strange ending where the payoff is the story.
Mm-hmm.
So you could easily have the payoff be like this massive narrative thing that does feel satisfying, or in that case, maybe a bit annoying.
Yeah.
Without needing this epic battle, for sure.
Well, for me, it's my favorite franchise that's ever been made.
Oh,
is,
God, here it comes.
I'm not going to say it. It's just Bioshock. Like, I love Bioshock. I love what it's about. I love the atmosphere that it creates. And I'm really intrigued about the concept of how it interlinks with all the other different games. However, it is a series that cannot do boss battles.
I would say the weakest part of Bioshock Infinite was the boss battles.
Why did they even bother with three? Like, did they not learn from one and two? They just weren't working.
That it blows my mind.
Why did they bother?
Because they've got Fontaine, and he's like, gets the injection. Congratulations, Fontaine. You've got powers. Like, and it's just like, and you're like, okay, that's fine. You look like a giant bronze statue.
He's so out of place.
I'm going to flush you like a turd because you do not sit well with this. But Ken Levine was like, I didn't even want to make this a shooter to begin with. I wanted to make it like a sort of atmospheric explorer, almost a point-and-click adventure, like a puzzle-solving game. And you can tell that that was a bit that was added in just to be like, oh, God, it's a game that shoots stuff. You need to have a boss, I think.
If you had that's, the exact same problem with Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Oh, that
where
was...
the bosses just felt like... I think, actually, they might have even been developed by a different
they
studio.
They were developed by a different studio.
Which to me, is the publisher saying, look, people expect bosses.
Yeah.
You need bosses in your game.
See, I feel really ignorant now for saying, oh, a good game needs a good boss doesn't.
Because some games,
Some games absolutely do. Yeah, and players do enjoy them to this day. Like, people love bosses. A lot of the most memorable moments that you can name in games are bosses.
Yeah. For example, two games that I can think of, because I really enjoy a good platformer as well in a Metroidvania, is that I really loved playing through Ori and the Blind Forest, and I have been playing through Hollow Knight. Now, those are two very similar games. Hollow Knight, obviously,
very different approaches to bosses.
Ori doesn't really have bosses.
What I'd say is Ori has is not traditional bosses per se, but sort of boss sequences.
Mm-hmm. But you don't think of them as
bosses.
No,
you don't. Where they're just for like elaborate set pieces that test your platform and abilities like in a very difficult manner. But they are effectively bosses within that game.
I suppose. I just kind of see...
The Hollow Knight bosses are proper bosses and very difficult ones as well. That really, you know, like put the barrier down between you and exploring further.
It's strange, isn't it? Like... I'm trying to think of a game where I could go into it and take the boss out and make it better as a result.
Oh, definitely Bioshock.
Definitely Bioshock. I mean, get rid of that siren boss. Oh, that was awful as well. I mean,
maybe you guys will have some ideas.
Because if you have a bad boss fight, it can actually act as a gameplay loop breaking event. The whole concept of a gameplay loop is you want to bring your player in, you want to offer them just enough reward, just enough for them to keep incentivized to keep going through the narrative, and then reset that cycle with something else, like a boss. But problem is that if you get a bad boss, if you get something that's so god-awful, broken, boring, it can completely derail interest.
We must have all experienced times when we've stopped playing a game because we just simply could not get past a certain boss.
Oh yeah, I mean, Sekiro had me for days trying to get past you've done all the bits now, haven't you?
Yeah, we
okay. Trying to get past Owl Dad in the other timeline, and I was just like, I hate this now. I really hate this. And then when I finally beat him, I was like, the satisfaction wasn't... the satisfaction wasn't from me going like, yes, take that, you feathered bastard. It was more a case of like, oh, thank God, I never have to play that again. Like, and I was like, that's not great, is it?
That's just Sekiro for you, though.
That is true. That is true.
I think Sekiro's maybe a little different in that that's sort of his philosophy behind the game.
To
really wind people up to the point that they want to die.
I want to highlight Kingdom Hearts 1.
I thought this would be coming.
pretty much every boss in Kingdom Hearts 1 is flipping awful.
but they have great ideas behind them, though, don't they? What's the guy from Disney, the hunter?
Clayton.
Clayton. Awful boss battle. Really hated.
They're all bad.
Like, if there's something that would annoy players, it's, here's a giant other thing that's in there, and it's invisible. Like, just get that out. But the idea of it is great.
The most egregiously obnoxious is Riku, because you have to watch this 10-minute cutscene every time you lose to him. Yeah. I think my solution was to run around the Hollow Bastion area and level up until I was 99.
You did the grind?
About 10 hours worth. And then I just batted the...
But that's not fun.
It's not fun at all, and that's not the solution.
You just got to get a good Benji.
Or overpowered her.
which is an argument for games that allow you to talk your way out of boss battles, which is why I like Fallout. I know you don't have a specific boss battle in that.
Well, the original Fallout, the final boss, you can talk your way out of it. You can convince...
Is that the one he kills himself?
Yeah.
See, that you can do that in Mass Effect as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, things like that, I feel like we need more of, because I'm not saying that I would prefer all the time to forego a great action spectacle, but at the same time, I do feel like there should be other solutions. I mean, Benji, last year you were trying to play only games that had no guns in.
And I've continued that this year, although I've sort of fell off the wagon a little bit recently, because I was playing Tomb Raider, and then I realised, you know what, she is shooting things quite a lot here.
But do you think that you could play only games that don't have bosses in?
It'd be difficult. The whole point of the no guns thing was not necessarily that I'm against violence. I am against violence generally, but against guns per se. But more that I just find it very curious that games disproportionately solve their conflict through firearms and through killing. And what I found is, as I suspected, there's so many more experiences out there where that's just not part of it whatsoever. And very few of them had bosses. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it is perfectly possible to enjoy games without them. But I also found myself maybe craving a different sort of experience from time to time.
Yeah, I do think that if... because what you're boiling a boss down to in some games is that there's the immediate challenge, here's the puzzle that you have to overcome. Would that puzzle element be as good if you just took out a figurehead of which you're actually destroying or offing? Like, there has to be smarter game design out there that tells us that we don't need to just kill something to get gratification. In fact, have you guys ever played a video game called No More Heroes?
Yes, I've heard of it. I haven't played it.
Now, No More Heroes had a brilliant take on the concept of violence and gratification. And basically what it said is that you will do these amazing boss battles. They're going to be so cool. But in order to get there, you're going to work menial day jobs. You're going to grind and kill loads of it. And the gameplay will be absolute trite in order to make you appreciate what you're doing, that you are locked in a cycle of desiring to kill people just so that you can get your end off.
Yeah, it's I think to charge up your sword, you literally
have to do an unspeakable to it. Like, it is a fantastic idea. And the best part is that it was delivered in such a way that loads of people started complaining about it. They were like, oh man, what do you mean I've got to like go and harvest 55 coconuts before I can go into this boss battle? And the developer says,
Suda51.
He then just comes up and just goes like, look guys, that's the point. You're meant to be questioning how much of an immoral person you are for wanting to kill people this horrifically.
People also criticized it for being gratuitous and its violence when, again, it was supposed to be like that. It's a satire of that sort
that's,
of gratuity.
That's hilarious. I want to play it.
But that's using bosses in a traditional sense, but the message behind it is giving it more importance, I would argue. And it goes to show that you can... we're not trying to make an argument to rip out boss battles.
We're not
trying to make an argument that boss battles need specific changing because you can only subvert tropes if there are tropes in place for you to stand out from the crowd. I think that what we're just saying is, as an art form, creating a boss is at once the easiest thing to do because you just slap something in there with a ton of HP, but it's also one of the hardest things to get right.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. It's fascinating, really.
It's also one of the biggest challenges for developers to do something interesting with, and I look forward to seeing what we're doing.
Especially in a game like a shooter, for example, if you're trying to make a realistic shooter, Call of Duty, for example, you can't really have a realistic boss, can you?
No, not really.
There's one game I mentioned on a pod previously not too many people have played called Zero Ranger, which is a bullet hell shoot 'em up that's very satirical in a similar sense to Undertale.
Okay.
And like Undertale, it has bosses where you go through the game with, you see like literally millions and millions and millions of bullets constantly, but you can just completely like drop arms and not shoot a single bullet to get through the game.
Really?
There are even certain bosses that demand that you don't do that, or demand that you do that,
which
is a completely different take on the bullet hell simulation.
See, I like that. I like it when they just go like, look, this is what you expect. We're going to completely do the exact opposite.
Whilst presenting
a situation which is the exact thing that you are expecting. That's very, very cool. I like that. I might check that out, actually.
I believe it's on sale. It's only a couple of quid. So.
Interesting. Wish we were affiliates.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Get a bit of cash that way. But yeah, so those have been some interesting boss battles to close out. Let's just go... We did at the beginning. We did like your favorite boss battles. What's the worst boss battles that you guys have done? And we'll just do that, and we'll close out.
Can I go first?
Yeah, of course.
So we mentioned halfway through the pod here on bosses that you got introduced to really early on, and you just couldn't wait to fight them. For me, I play a lot of World of Warcraft.
Right.
So, for example, even from the earliest adverts for Cataclysm, you were seeing Deathwing. Deathwing's a big old dragon who destroyed the world. He really ripped up some stuff and killed some people. It was awful. And the whole way through, so the way an expansion usually works is the big bad that's in the adverts, you have to kind of wait, you have to wait about a year to fight him.
Yeah.
There's little dungeons, little raids in the lead up to him. Dragon Soul finally comes out. Deathwing's the last boss. And it was terrible.
Oh, it was terrible.
Oh, you fight on his back. You pop some blisters on his back, and then you fight him. He's this giant head. You fight his tentacles and his toenails. You clip his toenails to kill him, people. It was terrible. Worst boss battles ever.
That sounds pathetic.
Purely because of this anticipation to fight this dragon, and what we fought was some blisters and some toenails.
Oh, great.
What Benji?
You know what? The boss I'm going to mention, that it's just reminded me, another one where you... involves toes and toenails.
What is it with toes?
And it's the final boss of Donkey Kong 64.
Oh, it goes on for so long. Yeah. It is so long.
I love Rare and I love Rare N64 games, but why have I decided to do a 5-round boxing match to close out a platform game? Where at one point as Tiny Kong, you shrink down to a minuscule size, go into his little shoe, tickle his toes, he falls over, and then you give him one. Like, I mean, it's actually really inventive.
Oh, yeah,
really wrong, creative, like, but every time you die, you have to go through the whole rigmarole. I think there's another boss in that game, which is really quite
good fun.
In the castle.
Yeah.
Where you've got these gremlins who put up these cardboard cutouts of King K. Rool.
Right.
And you have to blast into them, but some of them are fakes. So you just go flying over, and that's instant death. And it's like,
oh, that would be so annoying.
It's very annoying. And then they know exactly what they're doing as well. Really taking the mick, but it is fun, but frustrating.
For me, it has to be, unfortunately, a Dark Souls boss. Well, one of the worst bosses I've ever had, and that's Bed of Chaos. Before anyone jumps down my throat, like in terms of a lore perspective, I genuinely think it's one of the best bosses in the game, because I love the idea of having like it being like literally the Bed of Chaos, like where everything started, how she tried to protect all the world, and then monsters came out, and she's developed this horrible gnarly root
now
tree.
She is a tree.
Now she's a tree because she's literally embedded in all this internal war and strife. But the actual delivery is bad, because any game that's got a collapsing floor is pretty bad, because you can only find out where the floor collapses by trial and error unless you've watched a guide. That should never be a thing, because I feel like it should always be telegraphed where you can and cannot go.
Or you could just watch your feet, you know, watch your step.
Yeah, that's very true. Very, very true. But then having her brush you off that very narrow platform with just one hit, it basically takes all of the lessons the game teaches you about being able to balance your attack and defense, know when to strike when the time is right, and just throws it out the window, because it just goes, you can't block against it, you can't see where this is coming unless you've already done it before, and there is a massive slog of a walk to get back to this unless you found the secret bonfire that no one tells you about.
Behind a hidden wall.
And it's like, okay, I get what you are doing, but you are also doing my nutting.
Well, that's quite subversive, asking the player to be psychic.
Yeah.
we were praising Psycho Mantis for that.
Oh, yes.
I think with games like Dark Souls, they relied on the community all talking to each other and leaving notes for each other. There's an online element of they want people to be like, there is a bonfire.
It's a real old school mentality towards it as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've got to respect it. At the
brush
end
yourself
of the day.
Off and give it another go.
I was just infuriated at the time.
No, I get you.
You have no idea how bad it was when I dropped something like 30,000 souls just from falling off, and I was like, oh, I probably should have spent them. I'll go back and pick them up. Fell off again, and I was still like,
toilet.
And it's that lovely noise of that doom. I'm just like, cool.
Did you ever complete Cuphead?
I did, yes.
So I don't know if you had trouble with the dice. Who doesn't play his cards, right? I have to say, cheats.
Oh, yeah,
You go through all those. Really,
King Dice,
You go through
it. Isn't it? It's luck.
Yeah, you have brilliant mini bosses. Mm-hmm. I think those mini bosses are some of the best in the game, like visually and in terms of how you beat them. And then suddenly sends all these cards,
but you have no idea
where
the
spacing
is
going to be, and sometimes it's impossible. And
I beat that with Rich on stream, and it was very, very good. We're looking forward to doing the DLC when that comes out in 2020. Bit of a delay on that, but anyway, that was the podcast on video game bosses. Let us know what you thought about it down in the comments section below, as well as any other boss battles that you loved, and maybe another boss that you absolutely despise, because who knows, we might siphon through this and do a commentator's edition on the sort of best and worst boss battles. But as always, I've been Jules. You can go follow me at RetroJ with Zero over on Twitter, and I've been joined by Benjamin, and you can follow him at
BAR Threepwood.
Sorry, what?
It's an obtuse Monkey Island reference. BAR Threepwood.
Amazing.
Yep.
And then
Guybrush.
And Rach Shackleton, you can follow her at
Don't Rage Quit, because you know, we try not to.
Then thank you so much for joining us, guys, and we hope to see you soon. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.